Welcome back, everyone, to another incredible episode of Chat with Dan here. I mean, for today, what can I say? You know, we have here on the show, I mean, I'm already speechless and we haven't even started the conversation. Imagine this. So we have Jessica again, which is always a pleasure. And we got Elise also. I mean, both badass here. I mean, what can I say? I mean, what better way to have an incredible super badass day right now? I mean, you know?
I love it.
And yeah, I also want to thank those who are tuning in. Thank you so much. If you're new to the channel, as I said, don't forget to leave a like, subscribe, follow. But also, on the description below, you're going to find all of Jessica and Elise's social media. Let's follow them. You know, let's make them viral already. Hashtag Team Jessica and hashtag Team Elise. Without further ado, let's jump in. So, guys, for today, it's going to be a total fun activity here. I have a couple of questions. Like, the main topic here is how you see the whole entertainment industry would be in the next 10 years, right? So, by saying that, I will be throwing out the first question, which is, with the rise of streaming platforms and on-demand content, how do you foresee the future of traditional cinema over the next 10 years?
Yeah. I was just doing a little bit of research, and interestingly, I think cinema is still very vibrant. I think studios still get this sort of revenue stream from cinema that's very strong. And also, it's a way for them to market a film before it gets into sort of these streaming platforms. So I think it's still very much something that will stay with us. I think obviously in terms of like experiences, you know, being in a movie theater next to people, feeling that energy is incredible. And people, the audience loves it. And also like there has been a decrease in terms of numbers when it comes to cinema, but we're kind of already on a rise again, where we're halfway in terms of numbers like that we were pre-pandemic. So, there's a rise in terms of trajectory. And so I think it's definitely here to stay.
I would have to agree. And I think there's something to be said, kind of like Jessica touched on, about that communal energy that you can't get when you're sitting at home on your couch, that shared experience of having those exact same emotions while you're watching the same thing on this giant screen that everybody else around you also is experiencing at the exact same time. Like, that's the magic of humanity. And I don't think we're ever going to stop wanting that completely. I also think that in the future, we have started to sort of eventize going to the cinema. It used to just be the movies. Now you go for dinner. Now you grab drinks at the cinema. Even for Barbie movie, everybody showed up, myself and all my girlfriends included, fully pink outfits. They're doing the Eras tour at the cinema. It's going to be the same thing, girls dressing up. Like, it is an event. And I think the more that we lean into that in the future and make it something special that we can all share, the better off we'll all be.
All right. That is incredible here. Now, moving on to the next question. How do you think advancements in technology, you know, like the deepfake AI and virtual reality, will influence the acting profession?
It's scary. We would be lying as actors if we didn't admit that it is a little scary. Like, somebody owning your image with your consent for the rest of eternity or without your consent and using these deepfake AIs without you even saying that's okay, which has happened to celebrities. I read something today about Scarlett Johansson. Someone took AI of her and used it for advertisements for an actual company, and she's suing them now. It just seems crazy. It does feel like they're stealing who you are at your core and then somehow profiting off that without us seeing anything. And that's a terrifying thing to think about. Like, it seems like it's a Black Mirror episode, but it is the reality. And it's something that we're really going to have to be on top of and creating laws to protect artists in their own right.
Yeah. I think, though, that there will always be a need for actors on set, because I think what we love is the unscripted, the spontaneous moments that just AI cannot do, you know. So it's, you know, it's sort of that chemistry between two actors. I think that, you know, that's what's going to save us, you know. That's just not going to be an easy thing to replicate. So I think there's like hope. I think it's all about a question of like legislation or just like, you know, sort of having laws and or regulations. But then, you know, we as actors bring so much more to a role than what I think an AI creation can.
Yeah, and I would agree with this. I've had a lot of conversations with other friends in this industry and other creative industries as well. Mm-hmm. I think AI has the ability to replicate, whether it's like a certain style of music or writing or acting or whatever it is, but it does miss the soul of it. And like Jessica was saying, like, you don't have those little moments that were unscripted. You don't have that human heart. And I think it's also less impressive, the product at the end. If an AI creates a really great script, say, and we watch the movie and we're like, oh yeah, it was great. But it's, you're like, okay, a computer did that based on everything that was fed into its algorithm.
Right.
A human does that, and it comes out of someone's brain and out of their heart and out of their soul. And you're like, someone just sat there by themselves in a room and put down everything inside of them into this script to create this beautiful story to make you care about these other people. That is what's so impressive about it. And I don't think AI is going to ever be able to take that away from our love for humanity and our connection to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it might, you know, it might change, like, I was reading up on it, and it might change, like, the way, like, casting, I think, is going to go down, you know, the way auditions, maybe, like, in terms of, like, maybe casting directors will ask, like, the help of AI to, who, like, to do search on, like, who is the best actor for this role, or, and stuff like that. Like, so it's definitely going to be part of the industry. It's definitely going to change it in a lot of ways. But I think we need to stand strong. And yeah, like you said, just like, you know, there's that sort of human touch, that soul that, you know, we, you know, that we have, that we'll always have.
Great. I think one of the things that's scary if when you're talking about casting too is like,
yeah,
if an AI was like, they're like, okay, can you help us pick the best actor? If there's an actor who's never had the chance to audition before and they're just coming out of, say, like theater school or whatever it is, they're not going to even get seen by AI. So they don't even have a chance in the running. And I think that's something where the regulations have to come into play, where we really have to be careful before we start cutting off future stars, people who we could end up loving just because the AI doesn't put them into the system the same way.
I so agree with you. And I was also reading in terms of like algorithm, sometimes the algorithm can be sexist, or, you know, it's just, it's based on the person who created the algorithm. And so sometimes it can disregard, you know, for a role, it'll disregard these types of human, or, you know what I mean? Like, or these women or these people. And so it's, you know, it's tricky because, yeah, then it becomes that, like, the algorithm isn't perfect. It also makes these, like, sort of human errors. But then it's just programmed like that. And so you have to be careful because it could be that, like, every time you ask this software to make this decision, it will always carry that error within itself. Like, it's never going to be a perfect science. So, yeah. Like, it can be very scary as well. Like, it could disregard a whole group of people without us even knowing, because it's just in the algorithm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds scary. Absolutely. Now, with many actors transitioning to roles behind the camera as directors, right, or producers as well, do you see this trend intensifying in the near future?
We're so Canadian. We're just waiting for each other. Like, whoever.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what is me?
Whatever. If you want, Jessica, you can take this one and I'll jump on after.
Oh, you go for it. Please. Please.
I would honestly love to see, if we're talking about actresses particularly, to coming more heavily onto those behind the camera roles. I love working with female directors, and I don't get the chance as often to work with them as I do male directors. It's just a reality of it. I've worked on the production side of things as a line producer and a couple other jobs behind the camera. And it does give you, I don't know, One, it gives you an appreciation really for what everybody else does behind the scenes that you don't always get to see as an actor, which I think can be incredibly important and fill you with gratitude for everything that's happening around you that you don't really notice otherwise. And I think that there's something to be said for, like, especially the director role of having more of a control over the way that your audience sees the story. There's something beautiful about that and the way that you want to tell the story. And as an actor, you kind of only have control over your character. And so I can totally understand why, myself included, and many other actresses do want a little more control and want to share their version of the story with the people around them. So I hope that they do. I hope that we all keep going for more behind the camera jobs. And I think in the future, like, we're going in a direction where people aren't just doing one thing anymore. It's not like you're just an actor or a celebrity is just a singer anymore. People are multifaceted and they should be able to chase their dreams on several different levels at the same time if they can.
Yeah. And I'm just gonna add to that, that there is, you know, there's so much more content being, there's so much more demand for content out there. So it's a great, and then short format, longer format, it's a great opportunity for anybody that's ever been curious of trying something new, without having to spend or gathering a budget, right? To just like kind of attempt to create a short, you know, a short film, you know, like there's like these 24-hour competitions. What would it be like if I was to direct, you know, a piece? But I agree, it's all about sort of creative control, right? Like you said, as an actor, we only have the capacity to create this character. But once an actor moves on to becoming an executive producer on a show, then they're able to sit in the writing room and able to make some like sort of, you know, decisions in terms of like locations or, you know, where, you know, where you want the story to head. Or so I think, yeah, I think back in the day, actors were just sort of slaves to studios. And now, you know, we want that freedom. And, you know, you're a performer. And like you said, we're all sort of multifaceted. So we don't necessarily just have to stick to one point and, you know, follow instructions. If you're able to have that creative control, by all means, you know, let's grab it. So yeah, I also agree. There will be like sort of a rise in performers doing other positions within the film.
There you go. I love it. I love that. Now, as the world becomes, you know, more environmentally conscious, how might the industry adapt in terms of film production practices and on set sustainability?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've both been on sets before, and there are many things that a production can do to become just environmentally friendly. We were talking about water bottles, the way food is being, right? That's why I'm like, if you've been on a set, you know, there's just an endless amount of water bottles, and you know the way they, you know, you all the crafts and the foods and like the lunches and stuff. You know, I know there are productions now that sort of kind of try to offset their like carbon footprint in ways. There is a premium to be paid for it, but I think we're definitely going to be able to find a way to be cost efficient about it. You know, like, yeah.
I mean, I think we have to too. Like, yeah, we have to start taking better care of the world. And even if it's in small ways, over time, those small ways add up. And then we can also graduate into bigger things that we can do. The number one thing, obviously, is for me, I'm like the water bottles every time. And it sounds like such a silly thing until you go on set and people will just take one sip of a water bottle and put it down. And then no one knows who it is. So at the end of the day, we're throwing out not only just plastic water bottles, but like tons of water, clean water. Yeah. That we also shouldn't just be throwing away. So that's like a huge issue. And then yeah, craft services, all the to-go stuff. We can obviously use biodegradable takeout containers, forks, knives, cutlery, like the plates, everything if we wanted to. It is going to cost a little bit more in the long run. But even as an actor, I would be like, I would take a hit and rather have that kind of stuff and no trailer than have a trailer and have us just kind of being a little bit less environmentally friendly. There's a lot of ways that we could do it, but I think that's the most obvious and probably the smallest ones that are most manageable at this point in time when we're first starting to tackle it.
Okay. Now, do you anticipate a shift in the type of stories and narratives that will be popular or prioritized in the next decade?
I mean, I do think so. I do think so, especially with like all this, you know, talk of AI. I think in terms of narrative, there's going to be more like sort of survival movies, like, you know, I think sort of just, I think we're seeing it already with like Dune and stuff like that. There's like a new show on Apple TV. It's called Ascension, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, don't quote me on that. But I think, yeah, there's going to be a particular interest. I mean, there's always been, but like in terms of like survival movies of, yeah, I don't know.
It's, I mean, none of us really know. That's the other thing too.
Yeah.
It's a magic eight ball that we're like, well, I know what's going to happen. We're all guessing. But I will say, I think like we've already seen a big shift over the past 10, 20 years of stories that are more female led, that feature people of color in those central roles as well. It's not as cookie cutter as it used to be, where you'd have like the two really good looking white leads, which was kind of always the thing, or like male led shows where the women were kind of like side pieces. There's huge transition to that. I also think we're now starting to see lead characters that are a little bit older. That wasn't such a thing back in the day. We didn't have 50-year-olds leading shows, but now that's starting to become an accepted thing, which seems crazy that you're like, oh, like, why not? Obviously, they have stories to tell. They've lived more life. Why would we not see that? So I think integrating older leads and letting them be the stars is a new shift that we're going towards as well. And then in terms of content, I do agree with Jessica. I think there's a big space. Like, the world's scary right now. There's a lot going on and people, you know, are aware of it more than ever because of the global community that we have with social media and all the connection we have online. And things are a little bit scary. And so I think we're going to see a transition to films and TV shows that feature natural disasters, apocalypse, and things that are really within real time that people want to see play out in stories in a safer way, or at least to have an idea of what could happen.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, I just hope that we stop with the whole remake stuff, please. I'm done with remakes.
It's really interesting because this year so far, the highest grossest films have been Barbie and Super Mario Brothers, which is like such a nostalgic, or, you know, like style of films where it's definitely coming to get, you know, sort of an older audience, still trying to like appeal to like a new younger generation. But yeah, we want to feel like nostalgia maybe a little bit, and we're loving it.
I think there's something very comforting about those nostalgic moments. Like, it reminds you of childhood and everything when things were safe and happy and easy and all that.
I do think that it's smart because it's like coming to pick up an older audience, you know, but also this older audience they have children.
Yeah.
And exactly. So they're trying to appeal to both markets, which is like obviously in a way like very smart to like just open your you know, your target audience to like such a vast like array of people. Yeah.
Agreed. I think so as well. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But I think that is the direction it's going on, if I could make an educated guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, new stories. I mean, with so many. Yeah, we'll see what happens, basically. But anyway, moving on here. How do you think the role of film festivals will evolve, given the increasing accessibility of digital platforms for showcasing new talent?
I think it will go in both ways. I do think, obviously, since we're all connecting, even in this moment, online in different ways, there will obviously be a lot of online film festivals where people can connect and review movies that way in real time, even all together on Zoom or whatever platform you use, which I think is a really interesting concept. But I don't think in-person film festivals will go away either. And that sort of calls back to the earlier conversation we had about that tangible human shared experience where you can feel the emotions of the room around you, and it's so powerful when you're watching and feeling the same thing at the same time. And so it's just like the movie theater. I don't think it's going to go away or disappear, but I think we're, with the amount of content that's out there especially, there's a room for a lot of online festivals as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's definitely going in a hybrid direction where I don't think the major film festivals will go away. I think, you know, this is our way to showcase the art of film is through film festivals and to discover new talent, you know, in terms of filmmakers and actors. And I, you know, I totally agree with what you say. Like you need to be in the room and feel what the audience is feeling. And that's, you know, a lot of times, you know, you'll have standing ovations and it'll just be like, you know, sort of like an indication of like where this movie is going or how much it's appreciated. That being said, yeah, because of the pandemic, a lot of film festivals had to be entirely remote or entirely online. And so there's now that sort of infrastructure there to make that possible. And not everyone wants to, like, you know, move. Some people just want to like attend from the comfort of their own home, and they will have the possibility to do so. So it, I think it opens even more more doors for viewership. I think it's a great thing to have it hybrid.
Okay. All right. Now, with mental health becoming a prominent discussion, do you see the industry adopting practices or policies to support actors and crews' well-being more effectively?
Yeah, I do. I do think that it's relatively new, but now they're offering sort of therapy sessions on set and outside of set for both cast and crew members. And I think it's been really beneficial. You know, working on set is long hours, it's exhausting, you know, and there's not much of a turnaround when you're doing like a film. You know, you don't have like days off to like sort of just have a little bit of rest. So I think it's a new thing that it's being offered, and I think it's a great thing that it's being offered. But yeah, I've read about like therapy sessions both on set and outside of set. So if you just need some, you know, some help or just some guidance, you have the tools. Production is offering you those tools to get help, which is amazing.
Yeah. And I think I even remember during COVID, there was an offer from ACTRA where you could go and speak to a counselor just to help with your mental health in that regard. And that was sort of the first time where I was like, oh, we are seeing a shift. And that was really amazing. I wish it was for all industries. I wish everybody could have that access and there was enough money or availability so that everybody could have access to mental health care if they wanted to do so. But like, as Jessica said, we are so lucky to work as actors and to work in this industry. It is a dream job, obviously, but that's not to say it's not without its problems and it's not hard and you're not doing, you know, 12-hour days, whether you're cast or crew or production. And yeah, you don't have a lot of downtime, or depending on the role, it can be, you know, pretty emotionally exhausting, depending on, you know, your character could have sexual abuse or like a million other things that really do weigh on your mental health. And mm-hmm. to not have someone to turn to after that, I think has been detrimental in the past. And I think it's fantastic that we're starting to integrate it more as part of the whole production process. And I hope it continues. I hope it just gets offered more and more to anybody who needs to cross the board.
Okay. All right. Now, How do you feel about the rise of short form content? You know, like what we see on TikTok or YouTube. Do you think that that this will influence the type of content produced or the length of the film shows?
This is a tricky one. I have literally nothing against it. I think it's not good or bad. Like most things in the world, it has pros and cons to it. It's not necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, because it's great that we're having more creators who don't necessarily have the funds or the access being able to create their own content online, which I think is beautiful. And it's giving a lot of people a platform that they wouldn't have otherwise. But the downside to it is that, and I'm saying this for myself and most of my friends, our attention spans are getting much, much, much shorter. And our ability to focus on one thing at a time without having a phone in our hand while we're watching TV, while we're doing something else, is also diminishing. And that's like a little bit scary. And the movie industry, like any industry, is here to make money. So I think that as people's attention spans and focus sort of decreases, they're going to have to change the content in order to meet those demands. However, all that being said, I don't think that you're able to go into the same depth for the characters, for the storyline, for the arcs that are happening in those short videos. So I think that there will always be a place for long form content. And I think that as you get older, you tend to appreciate that sort of long form content as well. So I'm just hoping that this new generation that is mostly online on TikTok and everything else grows up. And as they do so, they start to appreciate the longer form as well, because I think there is space for both.
And what I find interesting is that, like, so a lot of these like newer blockbuster movies are actually really, really long. Like the Christopher Nolan movies that are 3 hour long, and, you know, these like Avenger movies that they like literally have to make in two parts because there's like 6 hours of footage or like 6 hours of film. So, I mean, here we have still like there's a lot of popularity for these like big blockbuster, that there's a big demand. That's what like keeps the movie, the cinema, that's what's keeping the cinemas going, are these big long format blockbuster movies. But at the same time, what I think TikTok has done is it's shown us that we also need a real, authentic, sort of maybe shorter content. And so I do think there will be space for like films that are just a little bit more concise, smaller, you know, of smaller format, but still that has that relatable, authentic content that makes TikTok and YouTube so popular. So I think we'll have both. Yeah.
I think there is room for both. And I think people have the capacity to enjoy both. And it depends on your mood. You know, sometimes you do just want to like I only have like 2 minutes here where I want to watch like a couple little things, or I want to learn how to do something or whatever it is. And like TikTok and smaller content is great for that. Or you're like, I just want to watch something in half an hour and feel something. And that's great. And I think that there should be content that's created specifically for those moments. And then again, like we said, if you eventize something like those Marvel movies or those big blockbusters that are a little bit longer, people will still go and see them. And that's also why I think cinema is a great thing, because when you're in the cinema, it forces you to completely focus on what's in front of you. Phones are away. You don't have tablets sitting nearby. And I think those are the moments where like those long format really do benefit from that in theater personal experience.
And then there's some movie directors that like Nolan, like Denis Villeneuve, who demand that their films be shown in cinema. It's a demand, actually. That's what it is. They demand that their films, they will not, you know, they will not create unless it goes to cinema. So, you know, that's nice. Thank you to those film directors for keeping, you know, that flame going.
Yeah, I saw Oppenheimer on IMAX, and it was the most mind-blowing experience ever. So yeah, I totally agree. It was amazing. So yeah, I do think as well that there is a space for both. I mean, we need both somehow. So,
Yeah.
Now, do you anticipate any shift in how actors are trained or educated for their careers in the future?
See this question, I just want to say no. I want to say in a way, like, yes, probably everything changes, everything shifts. But I think whether you want to be in a 6-minute video or a 6-hour movie, I think you should hone your craft to the best of your ability. You know, I don't think that now that there's short format, that that's a shortcut. Oh, well, you know, now I don't have to train. I could take a couple of classes and call it a day. I'm an actor. You know, yes, there will be more opportunities, more roles, you know, and more chances, but I'm like such a believer in being, a well-rounded, well-trained actor. I wouldn't agree if there would be any shortcuts to the craft. I think, you know, being a very good actor, whether you're in a, you know, 30-second commercial or again in a feature, I think it's so important to be, you know, just to be trained and to really hone your craft. I don't know.
And it's interesting too for actors, especially because there isn't a linear education system for us. Like there never has been. You don't have to go to theater school. Theater school is great and really helps some people. But if you want to do one-on-one coaching and do like 1,000 hours that way, it's just as helpful.
Absolutely.
Like, do workshops. And I just don't think it is going to change because of that, because we already have so many options in terms of education available to us to sort of fit whatever works, that we're going to continue in that direction. And there's going to be the same, if not more, options for them to learn. But I do think, as Jessica said, that you have to put in the time, and if you're not getting onset experience yet, you have to put in behind the scenes. Like 90% of the work you do as an actor is supposed to happen before you even show up to set. And so that's on you. That is the onus of the actor and the artist to be putting in that work behind the scenes to become the best version of themselves that they can be once they're in front of the camera. And I think everybody benefits from education. And if you really love it, and if you're an actor, you really should, because it's very hard. Then you're going to want to get better, and you're going to want to learn.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as global politics and social issues become more intertwined with entertainment, do you see actors taking on more activist roles in the future?
I think it's a case-by-case basis. I mean, I think it's based on the person. Some people are very comfortable being vocal and outspoken and using their platform to be an activist. And I think some people like to be more behind the scenes. They don't really want you to know what they're doing, but they're supporting in their own way, whether it's financially or any of the other options that they have to them. It just depends on how they like to live their lives and if they want that attention. And I think it's okay for some people not to want that attention. I don't think we all have to paint ourselves with the same paintbrush and say, well, I did it this way, so I'm better. You're not doing it the right way. If you're doing anything in terms of activism, whether it's behind the scenes or in front on your social media platform, I think you're doing a good thing and we should support that. That being said, if you are comfortable using, if you have an especially large platform and you are comfortable using it, I do think that in the future, people are getting more and more comfortable being who they are and being genuine about what they care about, which is a really nice thing to see, because it was much more polished in the past. And it was like, we had to say certain things in order to be perceived a certain way. And I think this has something to do with TikTok and social media, where people are just becoming more genuine. They're becoming more honest about who they are, what they care about, what they're scared about. And it does help us to connect with each other and care about things we might not necessarily be opened to, if we might not know about otherwise. So I think the more activism, the better, but only if you're comfortable with it and using your platform.
I love that. And I so agree with that. And like you were saying, I think like now that people have social media and they have like this direct access to their fan base or to an audience, they're able to, you know, to share this other side of them, like whether, however they want to share, you know, their empathy towards a cause. I think it, you know, it's just like broadening, like the audience for some. So it just might become easier for an actor to become an activist. You know, I'm assuming that before we would just like sort of like, wait, oh, UNICEF contacted me. They need a new ambassador. I would love to help. Like, here I am. Like, we're doing speeches. We're doing, whereas now you could just like, you and I could pick up a cause and tomorrow just, you know, start promoting it. So I think it's just like with social media, we just have like just a larger, more direct access to an audience, and so it might seem like there might be more, but again, any activism is so welcomed.
I love it. Now, given the competition and influx of content, do you think it will become easier or harder for new actors to start into the whole acting industry?
I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
I think it's a double-edged sword. I think, no, from my experience, I've talked to people who are on the sort of casting side of things and on the production side of things, and they are seeing a lot more submissions for every single role that comes out. So, you know, when you're an actor, you get submitted for a project for a role, and it's almost doubled. In some cases, it's quadrupled in the last 20 years of what we were seeing. So that is going to make it a lot harder to land those roles. That being said, those are usually for bigger productions that pay well, that are part of the union, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
There are smaller, more independent projects where they're not seeing as many submissions. So I think that we're going to see an influx in the number of smaller productions that do probably have a little less of a budget, but are just as interesting and just as enjoyable to watch for an audience in the end. So I think that there's going to be more content, but there is also going to be a lot more competition. So I think it's both. I think it's not going to be easier, but I think it's going to give you more opportunities as well.
Yeah, I sort of feel the same way, where I feel like there's more content needed. So there will be more opportunity, like more roles and therefore more opportunities. That being said, maybe it's kind of going to open the gates where people are just going to feel like, you know what, I can be an actor, you know, let me create a profile on Actors Access, right? And then let me just take a class, do a headshot, and then like, so yeah. But I again it goes down to like honing your craft, you know, becoming a, you know, if this is truly your passion, really never stop learning, honing your craft, getting your footage, materials, you know, getting representation and like climbing up the ladder. But I do, acting is, it is not easy. It's not really faint of heart. There's so much rejection that comes with the industry. A lot of people that don't have that fire or passion in them do end up giving up easily, because it's very, very hard. It's so, so rare that you just try something and you become an overnight success. And when it does happen, I also feel like you can, you know, crash just as quickly, you know? So yeah, there might be more opportunities, but yes, I do agree. It might be just like harder for a lot of individuals to like get, you know, get seen. Again, just stressing how important it is to be, you know, just to be well-educated and having your craft, you know, at the best that it can be.
And I do think how you were saying, there's going to be a lot of people who are just like, I'm going to try to be an actor and go, and that's great. I think like, if you want to do that, that's wonderful. If you don't want to put the work in and you decide that it's too hard, it's also okay that you want to be, if you're not that passionate about it, like it is really hard. Like
it's so hard. People don't realize.
Yeah. Like we can all pretend you're like, oh, it's this great life where you're just getting booked all the time. And it's always glamorous. And you're like, no, like you're crying sometimes and you have,
you're like, you rejected 90% of the time. We're doing self tapes and we're sending them into the universe.
Void, yeah, which we never hear back from. And you're like, did anybody watch that? I don't know. Like, hopefully. And that's people like, we're saying that, and we've been actors for years and have booked multiple projects, and we feel like that. So for starting out, like it is going to be even harder in some way. And so, yeah, it's definitely, like Jessica said, it's not for the faint of heart. And I think the people who are in it, who really want to be in it, will stick around. Mm-hmm. And the people who want to try it out and decide it's not for them, then that's okay too. And like, no judgment. It's always good to try new things.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
I love it too. That's incredible. Now, how do you think the role of a of importance of critics film, you know, of film critics will change in the digital era in which basically everyone can be a reviewer now?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I want to say that it's so important to make your own opinion about a film. You know, it's so easy to read, you know, a film critic's opinion or like the mass public's opinion, but we all go see movies for different reasons. And so I think it's so important to just make up your own mind and just like not necessarily like judge what other people are saying, but just like go in there with like an open mind and then make your own opinion. That being said, I do think film critics are important. You know, they've studied the medium, they know what they're talking about, they're able to make references to previous films or like, you know, genres or, you know, actors. And I think it's always so interesting to read. And then, you know, there's also like so many times where like a film critic and the mass public diverge in terms of like how they feel about a film. So, you know, I think all that being said, I think it's really important for an individual to like go into a film open-minded and just make your own opinion of it. But I think it's important to have both. You know, to have, you know, the expertise of a film critic's opinion and also what the mass public feels about a film.
Yeah, I completely 100% agree with Jessica about that. And I think like in the past there was, you know, like the big film critics, there was like Siskel and Ebert and
Yes.
everybody
Oh my
would
God.
listen to their opinions and like
Yes.
that was word of law, which I think they were very educated and they knew what they were talking about and they can go back to the
Right.
history and all that kind of stuff and it's very important, but that is just at the end of the day one person's opinion, like Jessica said. And so we can't put all our eggs in one basket and decide not to go see a movie or whatever it is based on one person's opinion. Yes, you can include it in your frame of reference for whether or not you might enjoy it, but it's always worth it to take the risk if you're like, oh, you know what? Despite the fact that he said it was really bad, I'm still gonna go see it. I think it's worth it. And I think that, like Jessica said too, if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, the critics, what they
I
versus what the audience did is always
know.
skewed. So it's like, who do you believe? And at the end of the day, all you can do is believe yourself. Like you
It's
have to
so
go out there and actually watch the content
exactly.
to know what you're going to feel about it. But I do think it's cool that we're putting power back in the hands of audience members to show their opinions on it, and even if they don't align with those of the critics. But like Jessica said, at the end of the day, like we're individuals and we should empower ourselves to make our own choices.
Yeah.
I love that answer. That's pretty cool. Yeah. And my last question, easy ones we can all enjoy and relax after, you know, a couple of tough
Actually the
ones here.
hardest. It's actually the
It's
hardest.
actually the hardest, perhaps. But anyway, what do you think that would be the title for this episode? So let's say we're gonna make a film based on this whole conversation. Here's the thing, we need a title. What do you think would be the best title for this episode?
I don't know, but it would have something to do with two very cute ladies.
I mean, like, it's too long of a title, but I would say I wish I had a magic eight ball because we keep talking about what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
And the truth is that we can only guess. None of us really know. And like, if the pandemic taught us anything, it's that, you know, the world is chaotic and you never know what's around the corner and you kind of have to be prepared for anything. So it'd be a disaster movie for sure. And something along
Survival.
the way. Yeah, we're going to survive. It's
It's cute for me
okay.
now.
And you have two badass really female characters for your lead, so we're doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I wish I had a magic eight ball.
I'm with her on this one.
Okay. Okay, that's pretty cool. I'll
You
take
got?
it.
Yeah, tell me what you have.
Me?
No, Dan, what does Dan
Oh,
think?
thanks. Yeah.
I hate when they turn that question to me. Yeah, I like that one. That sounds good. Yeah, I'll take it.
Guys, we can shorten it, we can work on
Okay, then perhaps, let's see here. Maybe. So the thing that that sticks in my head is two badass actresses, right? But
we'll take it.
I need
Yeah.
something. But you know, there's something else. There's something else on that. You know, there's it needs like a punchline, something to finish strong. So I'm still thinking like what to add to that, or like what do you think we could add to that one, or what would be the real, yeah, what could be the right one for this?
I mean, we can all come back in our next interview, which obviously there'll be one because we're amazing together.
Agreed. Like, I feel like I know you. Or
you look very familiar.
Yeah, your face looks so familiar. Dan told me you're Canadian as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
Where are you based?
Ontario, like Toronto.
Toronto, okay. Montreal.
Oh, nice.
So I'm French, so I kind of always want to apologize because sometimes I'm like, look for my words. French is my first language. But yeah, no, I lived in Toronto for 4 years. I loved it. But
I lived downtown for 10 years and now I live out like an hour east in the country. I miss nature a little bit. But Toronto's a great city otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. So do you, we're going to start it like... Maybe I'll just keep my questions for I'll add your Instagram and
we can chat on there.
What do you think about this title? While you were chatting, I got this idea. What about two amazing ladies talking about the film industry, or two amazing ladies talking shop about the film industry, or two amazing ladies?
Aww. I love the emphasis on two amazing ladies.
It's just two badass women talking shop, because like this is shop for us.
Yeah, I love that. That is our shop, and we're
there. There you go. Two badass women talking shop.
Thanks, Dan. Great title. Yes,
thank you so much.
I mean, at the end, what can I say, guys? I mean, basically, I love what you do. It's it's inevitable not to feel inspired every now and then, whatever, like I will check on what you're doing here and there, you know. And I do think that what you do is really it's really impressive. It's super bad as the fact that you guys are following your passion, you know. We know it's a real pain in the butt sometimes, and the fact that you manage now to keep doing it, and perhaps our rejection might hit every now and then, but you still keep moving forward. I mean, that's incredible, and I think that's a living proof for everyone around who either is listening to this or watching this, to be like, hey, if they can do it, I can do it too, perhaps in the acting or music or whatever, you know. The message is go follow your passion, and I love what you do. It's incredible. I also want to thank those.
Heart.
Yeah. And I also want to thank those who stay throughout this whole episode. And make sure to go follow Jessica and Elise like right now. I mean, you already know why they're both super badass. So go follow them. As I said at the beginning, let's make them viral. You know, it's let's do it like right now. Hashtag Team Jessica and hashtag Team Elise. And again, guys, thank you so much. Keep killing it. Keep rocking. And I'll see you in the next one.
All right.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.